Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Is it normal to have nosebleeds?
Is it normal to feel crazy horny?
Is it normal that my ribs hurt this much?
Is it normal to suddenly start hating vegetables?
Is it normal to be so tired all the time?
Hello and welcome to Is It Normal, the pregnancy podcast with me, Jessie Ware. This podcast follows my pregnancy journey and, with the help of some amazing, brilliant experts, is here to reassure you and inform you about all aspects of pregnancy and giving birth. We're now at week 39 and we're nearly at the end of the road now, please, hopefully. And I'm joined by our regular midwife, Isabel Boughton. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Jess. We're finally there. Well, nearly.
I don't know if I'm raring to go, and I don't actually know if I'm ready. I haven't packed the bag. I know I was supposed to do that a few weeks ago. I haven't even bought some nappies. My mum is in my ear being like, darling, do you want me to wash any of the baby grows? I think I'm just, maybe I'm in denial that I'm about to give birth. But yes, is that normal for either you to be completely overprepared or to just kind of be very lackadaisical? Is it lackadaisical? What's that?
Just feeling a bit more relaxed, yeah. I think, yeah, you're right. It can kind of go in one of two ways. I think often probably if you're having your first baby, your birth bag has been packed maybe since like 34 weeks. And if you're having a subsequent baby, you know, life is just going on and you're kind of just, you know, it's coming, but you're probably focusing on a million other things as well. So that sounds quite normal. But I think also quite good in a way. It sounds like you're just accepting that birth is going to happen at some point, and that's quite a good attitude in a way.
I think that, yeah, I think there is something kind of reassuring about the fact that I know I will be meeting my baby within the next 2.5 weeks, whether that is the way that my birth plan in my head has written it up, or whether that's through another way. I will be with my baby in 2.5 weeks, and that is exciting. I think it is this unknown that can become quite stressful for pregnant people at this time, because it's that kind of waiting game of being like, is that little pain in my tummy something, a rumbling, or is it just indigestion? And so it's this kind of, you're trying to be relaxed because you know that's what you're supposed to be doing, but equally you're on tenterhooks because you are being quite hyper aware of every ache or rumble. So yeah, I don't know what would be the clearest indication that you're in labour and you're not just, you don't just need to do a poo.
So yeah, I think, you know, towards the end of pregnancy, your body is doing a lot to prepare to go into labour, and some of those things you're aware of and some of those things you might not be aware of. But I think you're right, it's this process of kind of tuning in to what's happening in your body. And I think part of that is trusting as well. I think we don't really question our body's ability to grow a baby, but we question our body's ability to birth a baby. And I think if you can apply the same kind of trust in your body's capability that you have, you know, probably not really thought much about all the things your body's been doing throughout pregnancy to kind of nurture this baby, it just happens. And it's not that I'm suggesting really, you know, that, you know, birth always just happens and you're, you know, we know that sometimes things are a bit more complicated and a bit more unpredictable than that. But I think it's just about kind of maybe trying to like tune in to knowing what's kind of normal in your body and trusting your instincts. And that's not just about like assuming that everything's going to be fine, but it's about knowing your body and trusting that in the same, you know, assuming in a way that your body's going to do what it's supposed to do, but also if it doesn't, that you will know, that you will feel like something isn't quite right, trusting your gut feeling, all of those kind of things. So towards the end of your pregnancy, some of the things that are happening in your body to prepare for labour, which are kind of pre-labour preparation, and some of these things, you know, you will notice changes. So you said before, like various like aches and pains, you might get a bit of backache, you might feel almost like period type pains at times, and lots is happening inside. You also mentioned getting things ready, so that's like what we call nesting, kind of doing all the washing, doing cleaning, getting everything ready, and that's also part of your everything, you know, in your instincts telling you to prepare for the arrival of your baby. So some of the things you might notice are if you might have what's called a show, or like the mucus plug coming away, and this is basically your cervix has been really tightly, firmly closed, kind of keeping your baby in essentially for all of your pregnancy, protecting. There's a big plug of mucus inside the cervix, so the cervix is basically like a tube, and inside that is this kind of thick plug of mucus which has been protecting your baby from anything getting inside, you know, bacteria and things. And that as your cervix starts to soften and change position and kind of shorten, you often will see this kind of mucus plug coming away. And it can be, the best way to describe it, it's kind of like a big sticky lump of snot, as delightful as that sounds.
Yeah, it's not like other discharge you may be familiar with. It's slightly more like kids slime or something like that. Is that you know what I mean? It's got a bit more elasticity.
Yeah, exactly. It's like quite, yeah, chunky and gooey, almost like a sticky and mucusy, and you know, if you were to have it in your hand, you wouldn't like easily separate it. And it might be streaked with kind of blood a little bit, like it might have a bit of brown or pink in it. So that's also normal if it's not completely clear. It's kind of, yeah, like a chunky, sticky snot type substance.
Is it common for it to come out in one go, or can it kind of come out in dribs and drabs?
Yeah, it can kind of be gradually released. So you might see a bit. Sometimes women get it in like a one kind of clump, but sometimes it comes out in bits, and sometimes people don't see it at all until they're in labour.
Right.
Or might not really be aware of it in labour because just lots of stuff's coming out at that point.
Yes.
So yeah, that's one thing you might see, and it doesn't necessarily mean labour's, you know, imminent, but it means that the changes that need to happen are happening.
Great. What else could you expect?
So another sign that labour is starting is sometimes at the start of labour, people experience what we call spontaneous rupture of membranes, which is a fancy way of saying your waters are broken. And this can happen at any point throughout labour. It doesn't mean, you know, your waters don't have to break at the start of your labour for labour to happen, but sometimes that is what happens for people. That's how their kind of labour starts. And it's not always like in the movies, so it's very rarely a big gush. Most often you'll feel kind of sudden kind of rush of fluid, trickle of fluid, and you'll think, oh, I'm, you know, feeling wet in my underwear, and maybe put a pad on, and you'll notice that the water keeps coming. So with the waters around your baby, if your baby's quite low in the pelvis, you might just have an initial kind of gush of fluid, and then their head might almost act as like a bit of a plug, and it's just as they kind of move around that you feel or if you're having kind of tightenings or contractions, that you're then having little bits of fluid to continue coming. So it's always a good point, if you think your waters have broken, or if you're not sure, so if you feel like you've had some fluid leaking and are not quite sure, it's always a good idea to speak to your maternity unit at that point. Mm-hmm. To let them know. And generally, they, even if your contractions haven't started yet, they'll generally still want to see you and do a kind of general well-being assessment on you and baby at that point, and then make a plan with you moving forward. Most people will kind of go into labour once their waters are broken. Occasionally that doesn't happen, and we put a plan in place with you if that's the case. That's definitely a sure sign that things are happening. So another thing is you might have some loose bowel movements, not kind of full-blown diarrhea, but you might notice yourself going more regularly and it seeming a bit looser than normal, and that is thought to kind of be because your body's preparing for labour and is kind of almost clearing itself out a little bit. And also, if you are starting to feel kind of backache or period type cramping, those are signs that your uterus is, you know, starting to have mild contractions, and that can kind of, because your bowel is close to your uterus, it can almost stimulate your bowel as well. So that's one thing. And also, there's, as always, as we always like to refer to hormones, there's lots of kind of changes in hormones happening as well. And in terms of what actually causes you to go into labour, it's actually your baby releasing hormones, or like a hormonal precursor. And that kind of travels through your placenta and kind of stimulates you to release certain hormones as well. So these are things like estrogen, which has been lower up until this point, and also prostaglandins, which are a type of hormone that help to soften your cervix and kind of what we say ripen the cervix, because the cervix goes through this process of kind of softening and shortening in labour.
And also, should we talk about oxytocin? Because where is the oxytocin coming from? Because that can be a real help in labour, right?
Yeah, exactly. So your estrogen is helping to kind of increase your oxytocin receptors. And those are basically, you know, if you imagine your oxytocin traveling around the body, it needs like a receptor. So it needs like a little plug socket to attach to. And, you know, you have these in your brain and in your breasts and in your uterus. And these are all developing and increasing so that when this kind of oxytocin is then released, there's even more chance, you know, for labour, for it to have the effect that it needs to. So you'll probably find, you know, sometimes people describe this process of kind of turning inward in the later part of their pregnancy, and kind of like with that nesting instinct, kind of wanting to be in their home environment, wanting to kind of slow down a bit, you know, might be feeling quite tired and wanting to take, you know, naps in the afternoon and things, and just feeling in that kind of safe, secure environment.
That's really interesting. Maybe I am going to have a baby soon, because I just want to lie on my bed and watch Netflix and not speak to anybody. And I could literally stay there all day, and I'm very, very tired. But one thing, and I don't know whether this is my mind going in overdrive, I've been watching this thing, which I told you about, Izzy. It's this like very dated Australian program called Offspring, and there's a very handsome anaesthetist on it. And every time he has a romantic kind of chat with the obstetrician, who's like the protagonist, I swear to God, my Braxton Hicks goes wild. So is this anaesthetist helping me produce the love hormone oxytocin, and should I just carry on watching this program and everything that is rom-com? Because I tell you, the Euro bloody semi-final didn't do the same thing to me. It stressed me out.
No. Yeah, well, it sounds like there's some kind of oxytocin release happening there when you see this anaesthetist.
He's very, very dishy, and I do feel quite intense Braxton Hicks or early labour contractions. So listen, guys, tip from me, go and perv on the anaesthetist in it. Maybe don't pay attention to all the different births because it may not be up your street. I think everyone would really love to know about those kind of main stages of labour because some people may think that they're going to have the baby in a second after getting like one contraction. So, but there are different stages and they have all different terminologies. So can you take us through these stages of labour?
Sure. I think with stages of labour, it can sound very prescriptive and like these are really defined moments and our bodies don't work that way. It's quite a kind of fluid process. But there are kind of key features for you to kind of recognise in terms of what's happening in your body, which will help you to know what stage you're at and kind of what you can expect to happen next. And obviously, everyone's different and some people will have very quick labours and some people will have really long labours. And these are kind of general things that we can apply. So in the earlier stage of labour, it's sometimes called the latent phase. This is when your contractions are essentially, they're kind of not very regular in their pattern. They might be quite short. You might be quite comfortable when you're feeling them, like in terms of, you know, you might have one but still be able to talk through it. And they might start and stop. So you might find that the contractions start and then, you know, they start to build up and become more regular and then everything completely stops. And this is really common in if it's your first baby, this kind of start-stop labour. And I think sometimes people during this stage of labour feel like it's all for nothing. Mm. And that's really, really not the case. So much is happening during this stage and it's really important that we recognise that it's not just like these contractions aren't doing anything just because they're irregular and short. They are really helping you to progress along the journey of labour. And I think sometimes people feel that way because it's during this stage of labour that we recommend that you're at home. And I think sometimes maybe that's interpreted as, oh, you don't need to come to hospital yet because you're not in proper labour. And that's not the case. Things are happening. You're on the journey to meeting your baby. In terms of the next stage of labour, what we call the active stage, this basically refers to the fact that the contractions have become regular. They're every few minutes, so generally coming every kind of 2 or 3 minutes and lasting 60 seconds. And they're really predictable. Like if you were to, you know, draw these waves on a piece of paper, it would be every single one the same kind of intensity. Strength and frequency. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's this really kind of rhythmic pattern to the contractions. And you're still getting, you know, that time in between each contraction where your uterus completely softens and relaxes, but then the next one will come and it's very kind of rhythmic and predictable. And we know generally that when you're at that point where those contractions are really regular, that they generally will be, you know, dilating the cervix. So the cervix will be opening with those strong regular contractions. And, you know, we could enter a whole discussion about cervical dilatation. And I know that everyone will be hoping when they arrive at hospital that they are that magic 4 centimetres or more. But regardless of that, you know, if you're not having strong regular contractions, it's quite unlikely that you're in that kind of active stage of labour. And within the active stage, we kind of talk about the first and second stage. This all sounds very confusing, but essentially you can kind of divide that into your nice regular contractions that are dilating your cervix as being the first stage. And then once your cervix is totally kind of dilated, drawn up around the baby's head, has kind of become part of that main body of the uterus and your baby has descended through the pelvis, that's the second stage. And the second stage is basically what most people will be known as, like, the pushing stage, or, you know, the stage when your baby is coming out and you're having urge to push, or if you're not having an urge to push because of the pain relief you're using, you'll be in a process of being guided to push with your midwife. That's a bit of a whistle-stop tour in terms of what to expect.
So did you call it the second stage, the pushing bit, or is it the third stage, would you say that is?
So yeah, the second stage is where the cervix is dilated and generally is accompanied with these kind of expulsive contractions. So in a physiological labour where the woman doesn't have, for example, an epidural, generally what will happen is once the cervix is dilated and the baby has descended onto the pelvic floor, so the baby's come down onto the pelvis, that baby's head is then pushing on a set of nerves that cause these kind of expulsive, you know, movements from the person giving birth. So it's sometimes called almost like, it's like an involuntary thing, in the same way that we might, you know, you breathe and your heart beats, in the same thing, you can't really control what's happening when your baby's in that prime position. And in terms of the third stage, so the third stage of labour is your baby's arrived and then you have to give birth to your placenta. So it's the placenta that then needs to come from the body, will go through a process of your uterus continues to contract after the birth of your baby. This causes the placenta to detach from the wall of the uterus. And then, you know, we talked about some options during the birth preferences week, and you have options for how you deliver your placenta, but that's the kind of those three stages.
Let's talk about that second stage, because there's a word that lots of people will have heard of, or they may not have heard about this word, but it's this very common feeling where you almost want to backpedal and you're like, I can't do this anymore, I can't do it, I can't have this baby. Can you explain that moment and what it's called and why that happens?
Yeah, so I think you're referring to what we call transition.
Yeah.
Which is basically, it's called transition because you're kind of transitioning from the first to the second stage. So you've reached a point where, and you know, if we were to do in a vaginal examination at this point, you might be around, you know, 8 to 9 centimeters.
Right.
But
okay,
we don't need to do an examination to kind of
diagnose sign.
Transition. Yeah. It's just, you know, if in terms of knowing where you're at the stage. And I think things, common things to be feeling, saying, experiencing at this time are wanting to give up, wanting to go home. That's a good one. I want to go home. Okay. We can't do that, I'm afraid. Unless you're already at home, of course. Feeling, maybe even requesting more pain relief. And I think this is quite an interesting one, because I think a lot of the time what people need in this, at this point in their labour, is they're having a bit of a rush of some hormones. So actually adrenaline is coming in here.
Which is needed at this point?
Exactly, yeah. Okay. So we're quite down on adrenaline in the rest of the labour. We say, we don't want adrenaline, we want to keep everything calm. But actually adrenaline does serve a purpose, in that it kind of sometimes actually causes a bit of a pause at this point in the labour and allows you to almost rest and recuperate before the final pushing stage. And sometimes it can also trigger stronger contractions kind of to follow. So I think what people need at this point, what women need, is support. They need to be reassured that they are nearly there and that everything is okay and that they are safe. And that might be where that request for pain relief is coming from. They might actually want some extra pain relief, and that's also fine.
What could they have at this stage?
So, you know, for some people it will be that they have been using other forms of pain relief and they decide that they want an epidural. And I think it's like we've spoken about before, it's a case of trying to determine whether that's something they really want or whether it is that they just need a bit more of support at that point. Because, you know, even if we're getting very close to the birth of the baby, it can still take time to push your baby out. It can be a few hours sometimes if you're having a first baby, kind of 2 hours. So I'm not saying you shouldn't have an epidural at this point. Sometimes though, if you're feeling these transitional feelings, baby is arriving soon and it might actually prolong things to not just kind of go with what's happening. So I think that process of transition can feel quite scary. And in reality, if that transition, that process of transition, you will only really experience that if you are not using certain forms of pain relief like an epidural. If you had an epidural, you're not really going to feel that process of the transition. So if you're in like a birth centre or if you're at home, you're more likely to go through that kind of period of transition.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Also, I also thought it would be good to chat about, because there's kind of different sounds that are associated with different stages of labour. And I think that one of the tests that I definitely tripped up on the first labour was that I thought I was, well, I was bossing it, but I thought I was far more far along because I had quite regular contractions. But I was able to talk to the midwife on the phone. And that's sometimes a test that the midwife does, isn't it? Where they say, can you put on the pregnant person? Can you put on the mother? And maybe this isn't always the way. But there does become this difference between which zone you're in with birthing. It becomes slightly more primal, I think, in that active labour, when you're kind of past the 4 centimetres, maybe the contractions are more strong, where you maybe can't communicate in the same way. And that's when you're really relying on your birth partner to really kind of communicate for you. Do you find that that's quite common?
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to be said for the sounds that people are making at different stages of labour. And, you know, absolutely, when we, you know, as a midwife, I'm on call for the women I care for. And when I receive that call, generally it will be the partner, or the birth partner calling me, and they'll say, oh, you know, my wife's in labour or my partner's in labour and we're just calling. And I will always ask to speak to, you know, the woman or the person in labour, because this really gives a lot of information of like what's happening. And generally, like you said, Jess, if during a contraction, if I can hear that person is, you know, really focusing on their breathing, not making any other sound, I can also tell how long that contraction's lasting, generally on the phone, by how long they're quiet for, and also what sounds they're making. So some of the sounds you'll hear in the later stages of labour are much deeper and kind of fuller, kind of almost like guttural in the throat. There's kind of, I don't really know how to describe it, but there is something very primal around it. And if someone's pushing, you will hear often this kind of grunting almost, or like a, I mean, I don't know how far I should go this, but like a low,
yeah,
lower sound in the kind of coming from like the throat. And I think often people are surprised by that, by maybe some of the sounds they make, because it's not maybe what they expected or what they've seen in TV or media. We see women kind of sat upright in bed with their legs in some kind of stirrup or something and screaming. And, you know, that's quite rare. When you're pushing, when it gets to the stage where you're pushing, there's actually, in terms of what's happening in your throat, it kind of corresponds to what's happening in your pelvic floor. So you're pushing, you know, those feelings you're having that's kind of bearing down on your pelvic floor is it's a low sound, and it's if it's it tends not to be like a high pitched sound, because that almost like tightens your pelvic floor muscles. So there are definite changes in sounds we hear, and I think also women feeling potentially kind of inhibited that they can't make those sounds, or they're embarrassed to make those sounds. And actually it's fine to
let it all out,
as much noise as you want. Exactly. I actually read something earlier about someone saying that they used sound as a type of pain relief, as in the sound they made helped them during the contractions to cope. And in their first birth, they'd been quite embarrassed by that, or ashamed, or not wanted to make sound. I think also because they'd done like a hypnobirthing preparation, and they thought, oh, I need to not make, you know, I need to not be loud. And that's not the case. And then in the second labour, they said that they found that sound really helped, to kind of use that sound to make sound to help with the contractions.
I think some of those low vibration sounds are kind of almost like a kind of natural TENS machine, because they're the vibrations and it kind of, I don't know, it kind of really helps have this buzz that can kind of either be a distraction, or it's just about breathing, like remembering to breathe and not hold your breath, because that's going to really help. I think that's what helped me the most with my last birth, was just remembering to breathe and open my mouth, not feel constricted, because that actually Ina May Gaskin, you know, talks about how the mouth is related to the sphincter, you know, the rectum and holes, and if you open your mouth, then it's going to make everything a bit easier to kind of let things travel along. So anyway, but yeah. Let's talk about, that was a nice segue into poo. Pooing, you can feel like you're gonna poo when you're transitioning, right? But then you can also poo during birth, and lots of people are a bit worried about this, but is that very normal? Is that common?
Absolutely. So from a purely kind of logistical perspective, if your baby's head is nice and low down in your pelvis and kind of entering the birth canal, then it is going to be pressing on your rectum. And so to do like a cross section of your body, you obviously have your bladder at the front, which leads down to your urethra where you pass urine, then you have your uterus, and then you have your rectum. So your uterus leads to your vagina, and you know, your rectum is where your poo comes out, leading to your anus. So all of these passages are very close together. And when the baby's head is really low, it will be pressing on the rectum. And so it will be, in a way, A, it will be making you feel like you need to poo, because it's pressing on lots of nerves in that area that tell your brain you need to poo. And it also will, you know, have essentially a baby's head coming down and out of the vagina will force anything out the way that's there. So if there is poo in your rectum when you're pushing, then it will come out, and that is absolutely fine. We expect it, we get excited about it. You know, if a woman tells me at a certain stage of her labour, I might have already noticed certain things in her behaviour changing, but if she tells me that she needs to poo, or feels like she needs to poo, or I feel like I need to go to the toilet, that's really good news. It's really exciting. Midwives love to hear that. It's not something we worry about. It's, you know, we want you to feel comfortable. And actually, I think it's almost a state, it's almost like it's a stage of labour in itself, is accepting that's going to happen. I can sometimes sense that people are fearing that they're going to poo, and they're like, oh, I need to hold it in because I shouldn't do that in front of someone else, because obviously at no other point in our life do we poo in front of someone else, really. It's a very like intimate thing, and we usually do it in a nice dark, you know, not necessarily dark, but you know, an enclosed space in a toilet, usually quite a small room. And yeah, it's just about embracing it. It's okay to poo in labour.
So pooing is nothing to be embarrassed about.
Absolutely not.
And actually is a really positive thing. So there you go. I wanted to ask about pushing. Now, is there a way that you can suggest the best way to push, because I've read many different things where some people say almost you should push when you breathe in, because that's like your diaphragm pushing down, which makes sense to me, but also doesn't give me like the oomph that I thought I needed. Is there a right way to push in labour?
I think the right way to push is whichever way your body's telling you to push. Mm. So I've never had a baby. I've never pushed a baby out of my own vagina. I really believe that you need to do what feels instinctively right to you in that moment. And probably the more you try and think about pushing in the moment of pushing, the worse your pushing is going to be. So I guess there's two things here. If you are in spontaneous labour, so talking about labour maybe that started spontaneously and you're not using, you know, the types of pain relief you're using aren't inhibiting your sensations to feel the urge to push, then I really always encourage for people to go with the sensations they're feeling, to follow those urges. Sometimes, you know, women want guidance with what's happening, and it might be relating to that fear they're having, that fear of the baby coming out, transition, kind of this summoning in yourself, like this surrender of what's happening. So I try to encourage people to almost imagine the muscles, your pelvic floor, it's the same muscles you do use to open your bowels that are kind of guiding how you're pushing your baby out. And so kind of following those urges, and like we said before with the poo, not keeping those muscles tight. And it might be worth mentioning as well that you're only going to have those urges to push generally when the contraction is there. So the contraction
helps guide you.
Exactly. It's going to give you that, you're going to feel that urge to push when the contraction's there and at the peak contraction. If you do have an epidural, you're not going to feel those sensations as strongly, or maybe not at all. So it is a different process. You generally will be guided by your midwife when the contraction's starting. Sometimes with an epidural, women can still feel the pressure, so they know when the contraction's starting, so they know when to start trying to push. And that's really helpful. Or sometimes the midwife will have a hand on your tummy to feel when that contraction's starting, and she'll say, okay, the contraction's coming now, and you'll start to push. We know that the type of pushing where you take a deep breath, hold your breath with your chin on your chest, and you're pushing down into your back passage, it's what we call Valsalva pushing, or kind of coached pushing. And actually, in physiological labour, this type of pushing isn't really good for the mum or the baby. It's better for the mum to follow her own urges to push and to trust in her body when to push. And the midwife can help to guide you, absolutely, if that's what you want. But I think an important thing to do is for midwives to not interfere in a woman's own instinctive urges to push and how she's pushing. Because as soon as the midwife starts to say to the birthing person, you know, kind of activating that part of her brain, that thinking part of her brain, that can disturb things. So I think if, as a midwife, if I'm watching someone give birth, if I can see that everything they're doing is right, you know, that they're following their urges, they're going with it, the last thing I want to do in that moment is give her tips on how to push. I fully appreciate that there, you know, might be situations where, you know, you do need guidance and you do want someone to help tell you what you kind of need to do. But I think it's definitely a case of that kind of trust, and that can take a bit of time to get used to those sensations. And we know that it can take, you know, up to kind of a few hours for babies to be born. If you're having, you know, generally if you're having a first baby, if you're having a second baby, it tends to be a bit quicker.
So something that has been brought to my attention that I'd never heard about with any other pregnancy is a thing called Group B strep. Now, from what I know about it, it can really, if you do have it, it can change the place of birth that you're going to have, and potentially you're going to be having antibiotics and for you and your baby when they're born. Can you just explain to us what Group B strep is and why it's so important to monitor with a pregnant person?
So just for some background, Group B strep, or which is short for Group B streptococcus, is a type of bacteria that's commonly found in the vagina. And about 2 to 4 women out of 10 will have this bacteria in their vagina at some point. The important thing to know about Group B strep is it's what we call a transient bacteria. So it comes and goes. Sometimes it will be there and sometimes it won't. And it doesn't cause any problems for you yourself if you're pregnant. Mm-hmm. It's not like an infection you need to get treated in pregnancy. The problem arises with the transmission to the baby. So if you have Group B strep in your vagina, when your baby's born, if they're born through your vagina, they'll be exposed to this bacteria. And it can cause an infection in the baby. Now, this is really rare. I mean, I checked recently the kind of number of babies that will get this infection, and it's about 1 in 1,750. So we're talking quite rare here. Mm. Sometimes in pregnancy, it will be picked up that you have Group B strep. So it might be that you've sent a urine sample has been sent off and it's the culture has come back saying you have Group B strep in there. It might be a vaginal swab has come back that's been sent for some other reason. So it's often an incidental finding, which means we find it because we've tested something else. Mm. But what we don't recommend at the moment in the UK is testing every single woman for Group B strep. And that's because of this nature of it being transient, of it coming and going. So for example, we could test you at the beginning of pregnancy and you're positive for it, but then by the end of the pregnancy it's not there, or vice versa. It's difficult to predict that at the point of you going into labour if you have it present then. So generally what the guidelines are, if it's been detected at some point in your pregnancy, you will be offered antibiotics, which are intravenous, so into your vein during labour, and these antibiotics will protect your baby from the kind of potential risk of this infection developing when they're born. So another thing to bear in mind with this is, you know, we're offering all women with a positive GBS test, you know, antibiotics in labour potentially. So of all the women receiving antibiotics, a lot of those women actually won't have GBS present at the time of their baby being born, which means they're kind of receiving those antibiotics unnecessarily. So it poses a bit of a problem for us, because we just don't have at the moment a way of knowing which woman would benefit from the antibiotics in labour. So that's why we give it to anyone that's had a positive GBS screen in pregnancy. But we're not testing everyone, because then we would be giving huge amounts of antibiotics to huge amounts of women unnecessarily.
So when you're in labour, you're going to have an intravenous drip in you if you've had this test, which can be really off-putting, right?
Yeah, so it you'll have to check with your own kind of hospital what their guidelines are. So if you've been offered antibiotics in labour for GBS, some birth centres will still accommodate that. And some won't, and they'll say, you know, we want you to be on our kind of
labour ward
or delivery suite. So it's obviously, there's always local differences there. You also have a choice to decline those antibiotics. So it's offered, it's not something you have to have, it's your choice, and it's for you to make and to kind of figure out what's best for you and to kind of do your own research into it and decide what you want to do. So it's not something that you have to have, but it's something that will be offered to you in that scenario. Another thing as well is that generally after babies are born, it might be that, you know, again, this differs locally depending on the kind of guidelines within your unit, but it might be that there's, you know, some level of observation on your baby to monitor them for signs of infection after the birth. We wouldn't routinely give all babies antibiotics after they're born. And, you know, in terms of antibiotics, the reason why, you know, we always are mindful of giving antibiotics when it's not needed is because we obviously don't want the overuse of antibiotics, you know, can lead to other issues as well. So I think it's something that if, you know, some people are choosing to have swabs themselves, kind of privately, because it's not something that's generally offered through the NHS as like a routine thing for all women. So if you're choosing to do it privately, I think, as you said, Jess, it's just thinking about how that might then impact other choices you have or you make in the course of your labour and birth.
Is there any extra material if any of the pregnant people that are listening to this are interested in reading? Have you got any recommendations for them?
Yeah, I always refer people to look at Sarah Wickham's website. So she's a midwife and researcher, and she has done huge amounts of work on increasing women's and birthing people's access to this type of information. And she has some really good books, not just on group B strep, but also on inducing labour, on anti-D, on vitamin K. So kind of covers these big topics that you encounter when you're pregnant and often have like never heard of before. So she's my like top pick for reading information that's kind of easy to understand and then helping you make a decision that's right for you.
I hope that's helped clear things up for people that have heard this term and just shown that you've got a few options there. Thanks, Izzy. So we've talked about the stages of labour. Now let's talk about the logistics. This could be something that's giving pregnant people at this time a bit of anxiety about what, you know, you never know when you're going to go into labour, if it's going to be spontaneous, if you're going to have to end up being induced. So it's this kind of unknown uncertainty. And a lot of that can also impact on the logistics of who you kind of need to inform or look after or make sure are okay if you go into labour at a certain point in the night or day. Have you got any recommendations for people of how to kind of deal with that?
I think, you know, we spoke earlier about kind of when your labour might be starting. If you're starting to get contractions, you generally still have a bit of time to kind of prepare things at home before you make any kind of journey if you're planning to give birth in hospital. So as midwives, we kind of always tend to advise people to call at certain points in their labour. And so one of those is about like the frequency of contractions and knowing when to call. So it tends to be that if you're having kind of really regular contractions, they're coming every, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, lasting a good 60 seconds. And it's been like that for, you know, at least an hour or two, then that's a good time to call your maternity unit or your midwife. And they'll do that kind of phone assessment with you and kind of help you to plan whether it's the right time to come to the hospital if that's where you're planning to give birth. That's generally rule of thumb for first babies. And then second babies, because we know, or subsequent babies, we know that they can come a little bit quicker once you're having those strong regular contractions. We might advise maybe to call when the contractions are like every 5 minutes, or when you feel, having experienced labour before, that they are, you know, these are
ramping
contractions
up.
Yeah, these are kind of my intense contractions, which I know are a sign of me and being in labour. So at that point, generally, when you're getting those regular contractions is when you'll have spoken to someone and they'll advise you to come in. So I think it's just about having that plan in advance of, if you have other kids or pets and things, to make sure that you have, you know, who's going to be coming to help you. And, you know, if it's in the middle of the night, which it often is.
Why is that?
You know, I think probably because all of the hormones that kind of, you know, help, as we've spoken about before, that help to our labours to progress, are generally functioning better or at their kind of optimum levels when we're feeling quite, you know, safe and secure and kind of calm. And I think that that just comes with night time when things are quieter. And, you know, if you think about the type of environment you like to be in when you sleep, quite undisturbed, similar for labour, really. So that is often the way, early hours of the morning. And it's often, obviously, then provides a bit more of a like logistical nightmare if you're having to get people round in the night. So yeah, definitely need to have sometimes the kind of option A and B for those scenarios.
This is a symptom of mine that I've been getting a lot recently. And I'd like you to say, yeah, it means that, you know, labour's approaching. I keep on getting hot flushes and I haven't had them throughout the pregnancy at all. Is that normal at this stage of pregnancy? And is that my body telling me something?
Well, I'm not sure if it's a sign of labour as such. It might be just, you know, never say never. I, you know, wouldn't want to say it definitely isn't. I wouldn't say it's a common one, but we know hormones do affect, you know, hot flushes, that kind of temperature change. So it might be related to those kind of changes in your hormones towards the end of pregnancy.
So we've talked about stages of labour and logistics, but what's happening with the baby at 39 weeks? Is there much development apart from a bit of growth?
So yeah, baby definitely will have been kind of each week packing on a bit more weight towards the end of pregnancy. And also towards the end of pregnancy, all of the organs are kind of maturing, and the lungs are prepared for breathing. So something that's released in the later part of pregnancy, for the baby's lungs to kind of work when they're born, is something called surfactant. And this is essentially something that's produced that stops the lungs sticking together. So before your baby's born, their lungs are there, but they've never been used and they've never inflated before. And so what needs to happen when they're born and they take that first breath is that fluid is pushed out of their lungs, and then their lungs, they'll start to breathe and the lungs will inflate and deflate. And what needs to happen is that when the lungs are breathing, that they're not sticking together inside, and surfactant is what prevents that. So that's what babies start to produce towards the end of the pregnancy. And also another thing probably that's worth mentioning in terms of, you know, what's happening with your baby and what to expect in labour and what kind of to know to help reassure you, is that in your baby's brains, they are primed to cope with labour, in the sense that when they're being squeezed because of labour contractions, there is a reduction in their oxygen because the kind of squeezing of the uterus will kind of compress on their on the cord and on, you know, their bodies and on the placenta. So there is this, when you're in labour, there is during the contractions points where your baby's oxygen is reduced, but that is normal and that's part of labour, and that's also what they're kind of designed to cope with. And I think that sometimes that's helpful to know, because we have so much fear around generally babies kind of becoming distressed in labour. And I think it's helpful to know that they're kind of designed to withstand that stress. And the stress, you know, we think of stress as a negative thing, but in a way that stress is part of the process of labour, and they're kind of designed for it. Obviously, there are situations where babies aren't coping well with labour, and we have ways of kind of detecting that. But in general, labour is a like stressful process for the baby, but in a good way. They're designed for it and they're kind of, you know, expecting it.
Thank you so much, Izzy, for joining us for week 39. I feel a bit more prepped now. I'm going to go and lie in bed and lust after the anaesthetist and offspring. And I hope everyone's feeling all right and taking care of themselves and listening to their body at this stage of the pregnancy.
I wish you all the best, Jess, and I hope there's not too much more waiting for you.
Thanks, Bev. So we've spoken to Izzy about the stages of labour, the logistics, the signs of labour, the sounds of labour, and I really hope that has filled you with some knowledge that you can take with you on the day of birth, and you can choose whatever you want. You can throw loads of it away, whatever you want. I just hope that you feel informed and empowered and a little bit more confident about what to expect. Everyone's birth is going to be different, and you may not experience all of those things or any of those things, or you may experience all of them. And I just wish you all the best if you're about to go and give birth, and sending loads of love. And if you haven't given birth by next episode, we'll see you for week 40, where we'll be chatting more things about birth and that damn waiting game, and what could actually happen during the birth and after the birth, what happens with delivering the placenta, what happens with the baby's checkup. So sending you loads of love and wishing you all the best. Take care.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.